sick of all you sycophants, ignorance and miscreants, simpletons and little ants, trying to split their sentience. People peddle pestilence, land pipe on their settlements, and I don't think it was even food for it was excrement. Get your head in it. Second wind represent white shit. Kid, I never stepped in it. I reckon it's older than the New Testament. Edit it, shit. It's better to drink water.
Why, hello there. Welcome to Tequila. This is the podcast where nerds talk about tech while taking a shot of tequila every 10 minutes. I'm your host, Daniel Regueira. With me today, for the first time, I have Mr. Mike Caputo.
Hey, Daniel, how's it going?
What up? Mike, real quick, plug where you are from.
I am from tech247.tv on YouTube.
Boom. Yeah, boom. Mike's got a bunch of cool like reviews and like, is this worth it to buy type videos. I actually love the ones you did on the iPad Pro because I just got one.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, you got good shit up. And then also we have with us Miss Jaina Fontenot.
Hello.
You like how I did your last name there?
Yeah, very French. Good job.
Jaina, where are you here from?
I am here from, well, Texas, if you're talking about my geographic
location. Okay, if we're going to do that.
but I am here from the Pretty Witty Podcast, where me and my co-host Ash talk about, you know, politics and culture and current events and global news through the lens of people of color.
Sometimes they remind you that Mr. Noodle exists.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, that upset me. anyway... Okay, so I'm going to start off real quick, just talk about what we're drinking. I am drinking a new tequila I have never had. I'm excited to try it. It is called Cimarron. I don't know what that means, even though my Spanish is very good. but I got it from this place that has kind of off the beaten path liquors. And so, yeah, I'm excited to try it. Okay, Jay, what do you have?
Well, you remember how I was texting you and telling you I didn't know what I was going to get? Some tequila just kind of fell into my lap, and by that I mean my boss was like, hey, do you want this? And I was like, hell yeah, I do. and it is a bottle of Camarena Reposado. Oh,
there you go.
That's what I'm drinking. Yeah.
Camarena's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was free, and it came out of a cabinet.
Can't complain about free 99. Mike, what do you have?
I am drinking San Matias Tahoma Blanco.
Whoa, I don't even know what that is, but it sounds good as fuck.
That sounds amazing.
It is.
Oh, man. Have you had it before?
No.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm looking forward to your review of that. What's the price point, just out of curiosity? Is it expensive?
$55.
Okay.
For a bottle.
Gotcha. Okay. That's not too bad. Yeah. Okay. So this week, just guys, kind of like softball, getting back into the groove of things. We're just going to talk about what happened in CES this week. Yeah. And then Jaina brought something that's not CES related, but it's close enough.
sorry.
Which is fine. No. I also have one thing that's not CES related that I am looking forward to y'all reacting to. But okay, Mike, let's open up. You brought this. So yeah, let's talk about, I guess this is all about AirPlay 2 with Samsung, LG, Vizio, Sony, etc. So what's the deal here? Can you break that down?
Yeah, sure. So I think historically when you think about Apple and their content distribution.
I apologize. I'm so dumb. We're supposed to see how out of practice I am. We're supposed to take a shot.
I was wondering okay, well, I guess we're not going to do this right now.
Jay, next time, cut me off. Just make it happen.
So it's one shot per topic, right? Just make sure.
It's one shot every 10 minutes. We're going to
every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if you're done talking or not.
Nice.
Okay. So, Mike, since this is your first time and I totally forgot about it, I'm going to let you count down.
Countdown?
To the shot.
Oh, 3, 2, 1. Drink.
Boom. Oh. Okay.
Oh, that's spicy.
Mmm. This is pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Is it good? Is it San Matias?
Yeah, Matias. It is good, but it's strong.
Have a little bit of bite. Yeah.
Okay, timer on. Okay, so yeah, let's hit it. So AirPlay 2 coming this year. So the devices are from what I was looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong, they seem to be like rather pricey TVs.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're definitely the upper end of the kind of the product spectrum. When you think of it, it's more of the OLED televisions that are coming in, like, say, around the $1,500 to $2,000 price range and up. But I think what's interesting is that you see Apple partnering with TV manufacturers where historically they've kind of played or they've held their content close to the chest, only allowing them to get it or allowing consumers to purchase it from either, you know, their phone or from a Apple TV.
Right. So yeah, this is super interesting in terms of like it's a completely new
Shift.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a complete shift in what they are allowing like content wise on the TV, which is really interesting. So yeah, that's cool. I don't know what else to say about it other than like it's an interesting shift in what they're doing.
Well, so I think what's, you know, the two interesting aspects is one, if you were someone who had an iPhone previously, you were the only place that you could buy content was either through your Mac, right, through your iPhone, mm-hmm. right, and or through a Windows PC. So this is really allowing payments or purchases on televisions, and arguably these TVs run some variant of Android OS,
right,
or Android TV.
Right.
So that's interesting. Also, the TVs themselves will function as an AirPlay speaker. In addition to a HomeKit, which is their home automation platform accessory.
Awesome. And I imagine also AirPlay, you can like mirror from like your MacBook or your Mac or whatever. So like some mirroring capacity as well?
Yes. So if you're familiar with with Shortcuts, which is their automation app. So like after these TVs come out, you'll be able to say, hey, I don't want to say it loud because I don't want to. Like, hey, Shlomo.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Hey, play Mission Impossible 2 on the bedroom television. And she'll send that request to the TV and turn it on and start playing it. So it's actually kind of like it's like a last mile, so to speak, in terms of the components that are in the home.
Right. That's super cool.
Yeah. I have a lot of home automation things. So even though my TV is a couple years old, this is very interesting to me because I'd like to have a TV where I could do that.
Yeah, totally. And is that not the case with Siri? And if you have an Apple TV, can you not do that?
No. So you can't send content to the television.
Weird. Okay.
Okay.
I did not know that. That's bizarre.
Yeah. So it's not like Chromecast or Amazon or Alexa where you can do that because I think it's a function of the way that the privacy controls on the television.
Oh, weird. Okay. Now I see why that would be the case. Okay, gotcha. But as soon as AirPlay is built in, then it kind of like breaks down.
Correct.
Yeah, because Apple has control of that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, interesting. Okay, so after that, what I have... And Jay, I have it linked if you want to check it out. But one of the things that LG announced was this like portable monitor that's super fucking cool that is only powered by USB-C. So like if you have, like I do, the MacBook Pro that has four USB ports, you could have like two of these suckers and just power it and plug it in. You know, for the, you know, for as two monitors with just one USB cord, like one USB cord to power and also display shit on it, which is wild. Obviously, it would drain the shit out of your laptop.
Yeah.
But it's just really cool how I know the idea of like a portable 27-inch monitor is kind of weird. Like, it doesn't sound portable, but like the idea
that at all.
You can like have one little dock on a desk at somewhere in your office or home and then have like another little dock somewhere else. And all you need is one cord. It's kind of fucking awesome.
That is really cool.
And this, I don't want to call it proof of concept, but I think this is, because it's obviously going to be something they're selling, but I think this is kind of like a omen of things to come in terms of like not only monitors, but just USB-C devices in general.
I mean,
we see this with the Switch, which is really cool, even though they have some like proprietary shit going on with the dock that kind of sucks. You know, the Switch itself will still charge with, you know, any USB-C cord. And so, like, we're starting to see USB-C become, I guess, a more broadened ecosystem is the wording I'm looking for.
More ubiquitous.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. That.
And the capability is finally reaching like what it was promising, which is like, oh, it's a standard. Like it's the one chord for like all the standards. It's so great.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see it. But like, yeah, the use case for this, I would imagine personally, like if I just have like two monitors that I wanted to plug into my desktop, and that's assuming my desktop has USB-C. But if it did, and then like, if I want to grab one of them and like move it to the living room and like connect my laptop, like that would be super cool. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought this was really interesting.
I think it's really cool. I think there's definitely like uses for it. Like I'm thinking about, you know, the fact that I'm in my house, I my main computer is a laptop, and then I have this giant monitor that I keep in the front room in my house. But you know, you don't always want to work in there. You know, I move around. I want to go to the living room. Sometimes I want to work in the kitchen and, you know, watch videos while I cook or recipes or whatever. And like, this makes total sense, especially for moving around your home.
So, well, especially exciting. When like you want to go to the coffee shop and you need a second. No, I'm just playing.
Well, I was kind of thinking that because I'm one of those dorks that needs a second monitor, and it's like the size of an iPad, and it's super annoying because it's actually smaller than your laptop screen. But I wasn't going to say anything because I would look like an ass dragging this around.
I mean, like you can do that. So if you have, I think on Windows as well, if you have an iPad, you can, it has to be wired, but you can plug in an iPad as a second monitor.
Yeah.
What's the name of the app? Is it Duet?
Yeah. Duet.
Duet display is pretty cool. When I used it, it was a little laggy. So I don't know. I use it as like a secondary to keep Spotify up type of monitor.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
Whenever I plug it in.
Nothing important. Just like, you know, you need a second screen.
Right. Right. But yeah, this is, I don't know. This is just kind of like really cool. Omen of the future, as it were, which I really like. Yeah, let's see what else we got on here.
So
in the photo that that's in the link, is it the display that's on the stand or the one that's the smaller display that's, I guess, adjacent to the computer?
It is the one that is, let me double check. So the one that's to the left of the computer and the one above it are both plugged into the MacBook Pro in like that video in the article.
Oh, I didn't see there was a video.
The top. But then, the photo below, it's the same thing where it's like both of these 27-inch monitors.
Wow.
I want to see how quickly it drains the MacBook's battery. I imagine like
very fast. I'd be curious.
Like super fast. This is super cool. I nerd out about shit like this as like a designer and like video gamer and shit. Yeah, this is the kind of shit that excites me to see. So moving on, we can skip to the Google Assistant install on 1 billion devices. That was an interesting stat that Google threw out there. My question is that including their phones? I would assume so.
Yeah, I think it's inclusive of their phones.
Yeah. Well, even like the ones that aren't necessarily like Pixel or whatever, the like Samsung ones where they try to kill the Google Assistant on it as much as possible.
Oh God. Yeah. And it's really not working.
No, I know. And that's the thing about the Samsung ecosystem. You have like the Google equivalent and the Samsung equivalent of everything. Yeah. This is still really cool though. I don't know how this compares. I had an article open. How does this compare to Alexa's numbers? I'm curious to the Echo's numbers.
The most recent number that I read was that Alexa was installed. They had sold 100 million devices. It would be 10x.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, there are just far more things that are, you know, Google Assistant capable too. So, I mean, Amazon's really just breaking into that market. But I mean, you know, phone, Google Home, newer types of Chromecast, like the Google Home Hub that just came out that connects to your Ring video doorbell system that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, that was super cool. I almost got my mom both of those, but I wasn't trying to spend that much money on Christmas.
Yeah, I got my mom a Galaxy Watch, and then I got myself a Google Home Hub. So,
I'm thinking about a second Google Home, but our apartment's not big enough. Like, I can just yell at my Google Home Mini in the kitchen, and she'll hear me fine. So I can't justify it.
Yeah, I mean, I justify it because I was gonna get what are the name of those really cool connectable, like they're Bluetooth speakers, but they sync to each other, so you can put them all over the house.
Sonos?
Yes. So I was going to invest in those, and they were like, you know, the smallest speaker's like $199. But then I was like, well, what if I just got a bunch of Google Homes that did that? So now I have a Home Hub in the living room. I have one in a regular Google Home in the bedroom and another one in the office. And you kind of get that experience without the, you know, the sound isn't fantastic, but you kind of get that experience without the Sonos price point.
Yeah. I don't know if y'all heard it, but the shot timer just went off.
Okay.
Yay. So that's a thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Jay, now that we are on the second shot, I believe it is your turn.
All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, drink.
Salud. Ooh.
That was better.
Oh, okay.
This one's pretty good. I'm digging it. This one has a lot more spice than I'm used to in most tequilas.
Oh yeah, you said you're drinking that for the first time, huh?
Yeah, this one, the Cimarron with a C, not an S. Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm digging it. Okay, let me start the timer. Okay, go. Okay, so yeah, there was a bunch of smart speakers and whatnot that were announced with Google Assistant. Now, Mike, I assume you know more about this than me, but maybe you don't. So I'm going to feel free to tell me you don't know the answer to this. But I thought that part of this announcement was also that like not only is Google allowing other people to use Assistant in their products, but that Google is going to have kind of like, it's technically a third party selling it, but it was like they were going to treat it as if it were like first party Google Assistant type, that where it's like Google Assistant only is sold in this particular product. Am I wording that correctly? I don't know if I'm even explaining the idea right now.
So I didn't read that within the article. I think what I was referring to, or maybe I could have missed in the article, was it was really just about the SVP of Assistant talking about how many active installations they had of right. Assistant running. So really, if you think about it, I mean, if it's on a billion devices, or they have a billion installs, I mean, that is a lot of, it's more than iOS, or more than Android, it's iOS. It's a significant number of devices. It's just a real big milestone for the number of devices. I mean, people are, as an iOS user, I could confidently say that the Assistant works better than Siri, you know, 95% of the time.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. It's a big milestone, I think.
Have you noticed when you open, I noticed the other day when I opened the Google Assistant app, like once a month, whenever I opened it, that like one of the first things it told me was like, oh, hey, you know that you can set up a Siri shortcut to access Google Assistant, which is kind of, you could just tell Siri, hey, Google.
Hey, and then you ask Google something for me?
God. Oh, shit. Apologies for setting off not only my Google Home, but other people's Google Homes. Which is interesting. So it's like, hey Siri,
can you call
activate?
Me?
Yeah. Which is hilarious. But you can do that now. So, and then I'm looking at, there's just a bunch of products announced that have like Assistant integration in them.
Yeah.
Including cars, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. Like, I feel like that's the last frontier before we get ridiculous. what fridge was that had like Google Assistant technology, or they were thinking about it? And I was like, what do I need that in the fridge for?
Yeah, especially if you have like a Google Home, like you're good.
Yeah.
Well, like the fridges that have like the giant tablet on them, I don't get.
Yeah, for social media, I'm getting milk.
Oh yeah, like, the tweet. In college, there was a fridge at Mike. We all went to University of Texas. And so
UT Austin?
Yes, yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's the one. And there in Bevo on the fourth floor, or not Bevo, sorry. In the what's the name? I fucking majored communications. I can't remember the new fucking
communications. Oh, the new Moody?
Moody, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, the new fucking building. Anyway. On the fourth floor, they had a fridge that could tweet, and someone made a handle for it that was like fourth floor fridge or something.
That's awesome.
And just people were just tweeting stupid shit. But yeah, so back to Assistant though, there was a bunch of, bunch of smart speakers that were announced with Assistant integration now. I think like, let's see, Sonos. What else? There's this weird wooden one. House of Marley. I have not heard of this brand.
I have not. Yeah.
There's some smart displays. One of the smart displays I really liked that looks a lot like the Google Home Hub is the Lenovo Smart Clock.
That's cool.
I have not seen that.
It's pretty cute. I wonder, I need to look into it. I don't know if the functionality is the same exact as the Google Home Hub, though. Like, I don't know if it's better to get like a first party Google device as your, you know, as like a device for your home versus like one of these with just Google Assistant integrated. Like, I don't know if there's a difference in terms of like functionality.
There's probably some APIs that Google, or some functionality that Google limits to their own first party hardware.
Right. That's what I would assume.
Mm. Yeah. I would assume that as well.
Yeah. I need to look into that because I'm not sure, but I think it might be safe to assume that. But I like the way this looks more than the Hub personally, and it's cheaper. It's like half the price.
How much is the Lenovo Spark Lock?
It's 80 bucks.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on The Verge, and it's $79.99.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I was able to find the Home Hub during the holidays for $75.
Woof. Probably, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. Mine was like $149.
Yeah, I bought it. Actually, I bought two of them at $75.
Oh shit.
And I think right now it's $99 at. Oh gosh, the name escaped me. I forgot.
Best Buy maybe.
No, it's not Best Buy. Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Is it online somewhere?
It was online. I think it's B&H. Actually, B&H.
B&H is always doing cheap shit.
Yeah. So the other thing that was really, I think, impressive about the number of devices or the number of installations is that they also have 30 languages, right? So Google, right. You can now do interpreter or you can now do language translation in 30 languages. And there's now a new mode to do real-time language translation, which is actually very impressive. It's almost like the Google Pixel Buds. Remember, if you remember those from the Pixel 2 launch, they had those smart headphones that did real-time translation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've heard that there's like some bugs working out, but that's always how it is with Google, where like they'll unveil something and it's a little buggy. And with translation, like it's bound to be, you know, a little off at some point. But it's one of those things where Google are like the masters of like incremental updates to make things better within the life of a product. They do that shit all the time.
Yeah.
For better or worse. I find that shit kind of annoying sometimes when I had a Pixel phone. That's super cool, though. There's apparently, there's a section here that I'm looking at. It says voice assistance for your bathroom. Kohler, like the faucet brand?
Yes.
Is it? Why? What? Oh, it's a toilet. It's a, what?
Okay.
Compatible with Alexa. Yeah. What? And voice controlled mirror? I'm so confused. Why is it a voice? I guess for the lights.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the voice controlled mirror better than I can understand the voice controlled toilet, if that helps.
Hey, so and so, please clean my ass.
Right.
Please turn on bidet. Like, what? Well, yeah, that's weird.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of like CES is like the, you know, the home of like things that don't need Alexa or, you know, assistant integration. Like there's just a bunch of stuff that you're like, why?
Why? Yeah. Like we could, like it's possible, but is it necessary? No.
But I think generally talking about assistant versus Alexa, like this year, there seems to be more products integrated with assistant than last year. I think last year there weren't too many, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, I think there was like a moment at which everybody was wondering like, okay, are people actually going to start buying these and is it going to pick up? And then now it's like, okay, yeah, this is a thing and we all have one, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a function of how developed or how mature Google Google support was for the home products. Like there's some things that I've noticed that I can't do using using the assistant versus HomeKit. Like I can't actually lock the door using assistant where I can do that on HomeKit.
Yeah, I have not used HomeKit, but I've heard HomeKit is a lot better with stuff like that that are like the house based commands.
Yep.
And I'm not familiar with it, so I don't know. But it does sound, I don't know, like more, I guess, robust is the word?
Robust. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which is awesome. Wait, so you have like automated, like a deadlock or something?
Yeah, we have, I think we have like some like 25 lights. Something.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
My wife hates it. we have like 25 lights. We have the thermostat, the deadlocks, fans. She's like, this is ridiculous.
That's kind of awesome. I kind of want my fans.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I think it's really cool, but she doesn't like it. She's super into it.
She's like, awesome.
Wait, she told me the other day. She's like, hey Siri. I don't know which one to talk to.
Oh my god! Like,
yeah, so funny.
Does that like do you use auto voice? Because like you know how auto voice lets you program your own voice commands to Google Home. Do you use that to do those things, or is it all integrated with Google already and it connects that way?
Whoops, sorry, it actually turned on my Pixel phone. So you first do the authentication or the authorization. So you just say, you go through the list of home providers or the accessories.
Oh.
Whoa.
What is that?
That's the shot timer.
Wow.
Why is it roaring? Like,
that's serious.
So, Eric, friend of the podcast, I don't want to say pod because the pod save people say that. Friend of this podcast,
of the show.
Y'all have been on, suggested that be the shot timer sound. It's from Breath of the Wild, it's the Blood Moon sound.
I don't even know what that is.
Great suggestion.
It's like I don't even know how to explain it if you haven't played Breath of the Wild. There's this thing that happens that's super annoying in Breath of the Wild called the Blood Moon, where like all the things that you killed in Legend of Zelda like just revive themselves.
Is this on?
Okay, that makes sense.
This is the Switch one.
Switch, okay. Yeah, I don't have a Switch.
Yeah, it's the new one. Okay, if y'all are ready, I can count down.
All right, go for it.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. Salud.
Yeah.
Okay. Woo.
All right.
But yeah, I don't know what else to say. I don't know. Assistant's in a lot of shit. It looks cool. Yeah.
I love it.
So you were asking about the integration. So you go into the home app on your iPhone or Android phone.
Yep.
And you basically just say which home accessory you want to connect it to. And then once you do the authentication with your password, it just works. You'll say, hey, show me the nursery camera, turn on the bedroom light, because you would have already named those accessories in a previously.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't know that there were so many, like you were saying. Well, I guess the ceiling fan is connected to the light, so that makes sense. But there are so many things now that are connected. I was really just thinking of like Nest and, lights, but there are so many things now that can connect.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of step back and think about Nest product line, they have more than just, they have the thermostat, they have the cameras, they have the doorbell, smoke detectors and the carbon monoxide detectors. So they have a pretty, they have, 5 or 6 products out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just got the light that I was playing with when we were still on camera. That is just like a knockoff, like a cheap knockoff of a Philips that was like $15 of the Philips Hue.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I've been waiting for something that's not as expensive as Philips Hue, and I'm trying to convince my girlfriend to let me put it. Or do I have to say fiance? Is
I
that
think
a word
you
I
do. Like you don't.
If you put a ring on it,
you do.
If you put a ring on it, you have to say fiance.
Oh, it's such a weird word. I mean, my fiance won't.
Yeah, there you go. Good job. Which you don't have.
Like, not.
You don't have to say it like that.
What if I do every time? I just put a.
Yeah, you can add it to your okay.
she's like not into putting it into our living room, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna like pilot it in like the computer room, and she'll be into it, and then I can later put it over there.
Pilot.
Yeah, this is like this is the pilot. It's over here in the computer room. She was messing with me earlier and like changing the colors on me with the Google Home. That was fun. Okay, so that's a thing. One of the things I wanted to bring up, another monitor that's super cool. I didn't link it in the doc, so I guess I'll link it in the Hangouts for y'all to see real quick.
Yeah.
But there's this monitor that Samsung came out with called, what do they call it? The Samsung Space?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Space. And this is like, I'm surprised that monitor stands don't do this already. Mm-hmm. The monitor stand I have is like a rod that kind of holds the cables along it. So you can still see the cables, but nothing like this that can hold it like flush along a wall, which is what I want for like the most space I can get on a desk. And this is awesome. I want this.
It's kind of like a VESA mount or VESA mount. I'm not sure.
No, I have a VESA mount that's like, it's meant for two monitors and it goes either way. Like it goes both ways. You know, by both ways, I mean, it goes out, not that it's bisexual. I mean that it goes in both directions from the main like stick coming up from the desk. But it's not as flexible as I'd like it to be. Not that this one looks flexible, but it looks very minimalist, which I love.
Yeah.
Being the designer nerd that I am, it looks super minimalist and I'm super into it. If there were like a dual monitor solution that were like this, I would get it in a heartbeat. The one I have right now is the best I could find. Mm. But this is really cool. It's nothing like groundbreaking, but I thought it was fun and something that I would like personally. I'm super into like minimalist displays. So this was cool. Let me see, what else was there? Oh, Jay, there was a thing I brought up in the beginning that mm-hmm. was the TV that can like roll. So one of the things that I don't know if it premiered here per se, but it kind of like came into its own in some of the products that they displayed here is foldable screens. Like there's a foldable phone.
Yeah.
And then there's a TV, like an OLED TV, 4K OLED. That can fucking roll up. Did I put the link in the doc? No.
I'm looking at it on Google's top stories.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Okay. I also linked it in the Hangouts if it helps. And there's some GIFs of it in that article. I don't see a use case for this. I mean, like, it's cool from like a technological standpoint, but like, this seems like something cool for the sake of cool and not cool for like a use. I can't really think of a reason.
Well, no. Yeah, I was going to try.
Yeah, right. Like if it's like, I can't really think of it. If you need something portable, you might get like a projector.
Right.
Or like, I don't know. Why do you need a portable 4K OLED TV though? Like,
well, maybe you have super judgmental family who doesn't like TV in the bedroom or whatever. So you have it. And then when they come over, you roll it up and put it in the closet.
The problem sounds like your family. Anyway.
I tried.
I have no idea. Yeah. I can't think of a use case for this. I saw this and I was like, that's interesting, but why?
Yeah. I mean, some of those things are so cool though. Like, you know, things that have no purpose. Like, I'm still thinking about this talking toilet. Like, if I had...
And that's, according to my friends who have visited Japan, like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
It is a thing. It's a thing.
Like, why, though? I don't... Yeah, no, I'm good. This is so odd. I don't know. Mike, do you have anything to say? I have nothing to say about this other than why.
So I think that the interesting part is where the TV will roll down to a smaller aspect ratio or smaller size. And you can think about if you were watching a movie that was shot in a different aspect ratio so you could actually then possibly match the aspect ratio of the TV to the movie. Other than that, I think when it's in this, this like docked position, there is a display, or the display acts kind of as a information center where it can like tell you the temperature and things like that. But other than that, no, it looks like a very expensive toy.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I do like the like display of like, I don't even know. It's playing a song. So it's just like showing like the top, I guess like eighth of the television as it plays a song,
yep.
Which is like fun, but like, I don't know. It sounds like a solution seeking for a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there will be some application of this technology that is genuinely
useful,
problem solving. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was thinking about when I was working in education and how often you would find yourself needing a screen and not having a screen. So yeah. Like things like that, it would make a lot of sense for like education.
What if your smart board could do just roll up?
Yes.
or I mean, maybe it's, you know, the next application is not necessarily in the stand, but maybe it's somewhere like in your bedroom, right? Like on a desk or a nightstand.
Yeah, like if it could have like a nice dock or something that you can prop it on or something. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure the technology of, I guess, rollable LED or OLED in this case will be used for something. At least I hope so. Otherwise, it's just kind of...
Something cool that happened. Yeah.
Something marginally cool. Yeah, I don't know. So that's a thing.
It's a thing.
What? It's a thing that happened. I don't know how to feel about it. There was the foldable phone. I didn't really look at that. Mike, did you look at that at all?
I did look at it and I was disgusted.
I looked at it and I didn't. Yeah. No.
It looks like crap.
And it feels like the most like half-baked. Yeah. Half-baked isn't even the right phrase, but like half-baked version of the shit that they have in Westworld, like the little folding tablet screen thingy.
It was like two hardware developers got like they're just making a joke, and all of a sudden someone thought they could really do it, and they brought it to CES.
It was like they were all in a conference room and they were like, "Hey, do you remember the Motorola Razr? What if it was drunk?" And like that's what this is. Like looking at it, it just looks droopy and sad.
Let's make it Blade Runner-y and then make it drunk. Yes, I don't know.
No,
I don't know how to feel about that.
And it hurts my feelings that. Because I've had a Samsung Galaxy nerd, like I've had every Galaxy since the first one, and the fact that this is the Galaxy, like it could land on the Galaxy 10 like this, just makes me uncomfortable.
That's like a bye.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find something else to do with myself. This is
like not goodbye.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Jay, you wanted to talk about this caller verification thing.
Yeah. So go. Kind of like I think T-Mobile just kind of used. Just kind of use CES to make an announcement, which is kind of how I'm using this to make an announcement.
Oh, so this was CES related and I was wrong.
Sort of. I mean, not really. But they just used this opportunity because they're rolling out this new caller verified feature. So you know how spam callers can spoof something in your area code to make it look familiar, and then they call you and then you answer because you think it's just, you know, some cousin whose number you didn't save and it turns out to be somebody trying to sell you insurance.
Yes.
Well... They, T-Mobile's rolling out, they're just going to start it with the Galaxy Note 9 and then roll it out to, you know, things that are purchased from T-Mobile stores after that. But it's basically a caller verification that happens when, like with your caller ID. So it'll tell you whether or not a caller is verified when it shows up on your phone. So you can choose to ignore /block or answer. And it's supposed to eventually filter out all of these things that are spammers and scammers and spoofers and all of those things. And it's like the implementation of the stir and shaken standard. So I'm pretty excited about
it. The what?
Stir and shaken?
What is that? Oh.
Yeah, they're like the standards for... Oh, God.
I'm going to pour this, and you're going to explain what did you say? Stir
and shake, like shaken, not stirred, stir and shaken. So, I don't know like way too much about it, but basically it's the standard by which it's like a use case scenario for how they determine whether or not something is probably a spoofed call. So they're using these rules to, just kind of apply to every call so that. And it's, you know, in beta right now, but I'm really excited about it. At the beginning of this year, you know how you know, at your job, you register for new health insurance for the year coming?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I accidentally declined health and took everything else. Dental, vision, beneficiary, like, you know, death and dismemberment. Like, I had everything except health insurance. And it was like a $500 mistake because I had to fix it after the first.
Yeah.
But, for those two or three days that I didn't have health insurance, I got so many spoof calls from things that had my area code trying to sell me like some fake health insurance thing. So I'm really excited about this. I get like way too many of those calls.
That's crazy. I mean, I get so many of those every week. I get at least like one a day. But also, I remember when I was on the Pixel has something similar where like it has a suspected spam, quote unquote, thing show up on your phone.
Yeah. And we, like, T-Mobile has that now as well, where it has the caller ID function that's, like, possible scammer or something like that.
Gotcha.
But this is just, like, an extra level of security. And then it will eventually block those calls without you having to, you know, physically take that action and block it.
Oh. Interesting. So that's cool.
The Pixel and Google, they're doing it through crowdsourcing. And that's how
it's been working. I have no idea how they do it. All I know is that sometimes when I got phone calls that were numbers I didn't have registered, it would like be the whole screen was red and was like suspected spam. Do not pick up.
Yeah, that's what mine does.
Okay, so it's not just the Pixel. It's like all Android phones.
Yeah, I think it's all like Android phones.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was Pixel only or all of them. But yeah, that is a feature I miss. Although I've just gotten accustomed to not picking up.
Right. Yeah. People mine says scam likely. That's the caller ID function. Scam likely. So, yeah.
Okay, let's take the shot. Mike, I believe it's your turn to count.
Wait, I need to pour up. All right.
Girl, you got to get ready.
Sorry, I forgot we did this, that the thing went off.
I forgot that alcohol was part of this podcast.
3, 2, 1.
Boom. Oh, got some on my face.
That's where it goes.
That's exactly where it goes. Woo. Okay, so I wanted one of the things that was announced at CES and that I heard about it. I was listening to the Vergecast earlier today to try to get up on what had happened this week. And one of the things they brought up, and I started looking into it, is this little robot thing called Boco Emo. And so I believe it's by a Japanese company. Yeah, Yukai Entertaining, or Engineering, sorry. But it's spelled B-O-C-C-O and then Emo. And the Emo is supposed to be like emotional. So the idea is, this is really weird. I can't tell if it's cute or creepy. I'm going to link y'all here in the Hangout so you can see.
Oh, yeah. Look at this.
It's so bizarre. It's so weird. The intent of this thing is basically to keep tabs on like your child or your aging parents.
oh my God.
But so it's like whenever you walk into a room and like express feelings, like say phrases that are like, I feel good or stuff like that. It'll like shake its head and have like green lights in its cheeks and be like, okay, good. And then it'll like text your like caretaker. So like, you know, I guess us in the instance of either our children or our parents. And you kind of like put it in, you know, the kitchen or living room or something, and it'll like detect when like doors open and stuff. And the idea is like, it's just this like cute thing that you keep in their room to like keep like, just keep up on your family. and I'm so confused. Like, I don't know what to think about this.
Oh, it's a Furby?
I mean, like, a useful Furby?
Like useful, a more useful Furby?
Maybe. Yeah. Like, questionably more useful.
I really don't
know how to feel about this.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that could go either way, right? Like, if you had a 10-year-old that was really into stuff like this because they watch way too many Disney movies and they wish they had a bird that talked to them, but like, this could be cute.
But I'm not sure it talks. It might. Talk. I'm not sure.
Well, it chirps. I'm like reading all the birds that it chirps. So
there you go.
I don't know. We'll see. I think this might not be like an American thing. And then
weird.
I just can't wrap my brain around it.
Yeah, this might make more sense in like the Japanese context. I think it makes more sense instead of like in the children use case. It makes more sense in like the geriatric old person use case.
Right? Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Japan has the,
Oh, like the highest age population?
Yeah, they have the largest population of elderly people in the world.
Yeah. So I guess it does make sense for like keeping up with them. It's just so weird. Yeah, that's the one context where I see it being useful. And even then, it is an odd way to keep up with the old person. But I guess it is a way that's cutesy. And the Japanese love cutesy shit. I'm not opposed to it. I'm just like unsure about it because the functions seem like very few and far between. And yeah. I don't know.
Reading this description that says that it can, you know, if you use words like tired, it'll put its head down and make a sad whining noise. And that would just right. make me sad because it feels like I'm making something else stressed out because I'm stressed out, even though it's not a real living thing. I don't know.
It would, okay. just bother me. Piggybacking off that sentiment, I want to link another robot okay. that I saw called the... Okay, so I guess it's supposed to be pronounced like robot. The Love-ot? Okay, I'm going to link it here in the Hangouts for okay. y'all to see again. I don't know. So this guy just kind of roves around your home asking for attention like a pet. And it has like a camera on its head. And it's just like, hug me and give me attention and stuff. And it, I think that's all it does. But it recognizes like up to several hundred people apparently. And so like if you don't treat it well, it'll like seek other people and like shun you. And I don't, this is one I don't even know how to feel about, like, more so than the last one. It's so weird. Oh. It's so bizarre. Like, it's so weird. I'm so, I feel like I have questions, but I don't. I'm just like, what? I'm wow. more like in awe. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this. So for those of you listening and you're not able to Google it, it looks like a cross between, I mean, it's a stuffed animal on wheels with a camera on its head, which is really weird, but the stuffed creature itself and digitalized, which is also weird, yeah. but the creature itself looks like a cross between like a sloth and yeah. a penguin.
Yeah.
Or like it is sloth-like, a mammalian,
yes.
but like it, like the body form is penguin-like.
Yeah. It's like, do you, this may have been super niche, but you remember like in 2010, 2011, Disney came out with those Pookaloos that were like really minimalistic versions of their main characters. This is what that looks like, but larger.
Wait, with what?
Pookaloos. Do you remember those?
No.
You made that up. What is that?
I did not. Okay, so P-O-O-K. A
P O O K A
L O O Z.
Wait, I wasn't typing. I was just typing into the ether.
Okay. Pookaloos. They're these like Disney stuffed animal characters. They're super minimalist.
I hate the spelling.
And there are like a zillion of them.
Oh, it's like Beanie Babies, but Disney shit.
Right. Yeah. It just like reminds me of that.
Yeah. This is creepy. It but really does. Oh, God. The Pookaloos. Woody is terrible. This is
awful.
I'm closing this. It's the worst. It's genuinely horrifying.
You're welcome for that.
So these Love-ots, their eyes are digital, which is also real weird. Kind of like, have y'all seen like the new 2.0 or 3.0, whatever version it is, the most recent one, Furbies with digital eyes? Your silence tells me no.
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 They brought Furbies back and they have digital eyes and it's the worst thing ever. These have digital eyes that are really high def. And it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't, it's a no for me.
I know.
It's so weird.
Wow, this is $3,000?
Yes. It is so expensive. Oh, I don't understand.
Is it for people that are allergic to dogs and they want to know what having a dog is like? This is the same
company that like one or two CESs ago, they had come out with, I think this is the same company at least, there was like a cat pillow where it was like effectively a pillow a cat whose body was a pillow with missing the head, but it had a tail. And so you would like cuddle it and it would like make sounds and like move the tail.
Oh no.
And make like cat sounds. Yeah, that's the proper reaction.
No. No.
I just don't.
I am not very often at a loss for words, but I don't have any right now.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Like I watched the video not long before getting on the call with y'all, and I was a little silent in the beginning of the call just because I was spooked by this thing. There's a somewhat dim photo with the light up with the backlit eyes, the digital eyes, and it's gonna give me nightmares. I don't know, Mike. Do you have feelings?
Yeah, it's just very strange. I still can't get over it costs $3,000. But I'm not in the market for a digital robot, so maybe I think it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's like, it costs $3,000 to be haunted by.
Right. I remember, like, in the 90s, there was this remote control robot that I had got for my birthday that was, like, $100, $150. And, you know, you could, like, rove around the home, and then, like, in the remote control, you can talk into it, and it would be, like, a walkie-talkie. That's, like, infinitely more... I feel like I got way more out of that than I could get out of this thing.
Yeah.
This is effectively a Furby that can chase you down and like ask for hugs and shit. And not as ugly. It's a less ugly Furby.
Yeah. This is going to like feed the imaginations of the people who will create the best horror movies of the next generation.
This is going to be a Black Mirror episode. Because, again, those of you listening, it has, and this is, again, for it to recognize the, I don't know how many hundreds of people it can recognize, I forget. But it has, like, just this camera that's about a half to maybe even a third the length of its head on top of its head. So it's like a Teletubby antenna, but it's really large and it's a camera. So it feels like, I don't know, it feels like this Big Brother toy that was given to you. I don't know how to feel about this.
I don't know.
I'm very against this. I bet the $3,000 was just for that damn camera technology and recognizing people. That's so weird. There's so much like bizarre shit that happens at CES, and this is no exception. I really don't know what to say about it, but I'm just going to keep ranting. I don't know. I really don't know. Anyway, I guess moving on. So I want to get y'all's reaction. There's this thing I put in the doc. So both of you go to the doc. When you're ready, I want you to click at the same time. I want this to be an interactive experience.
Okay.
For both of you. So when you're ready,
I'm hovering.
To click on the LOL, let each other know, and just go for... shit. It's shot time.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do that first.
Fuck.
That was really disruptive to my peace.
You know, this podcast is not meant for your peace.
That is the truth.
I don't think tequila is meant for peace.
I don't think it is either. It's like the least peaceful hard liquor.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think any hard liquor is peaceful, but tequila is probably the least.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, I'm ready. Jay, I think it's your turn.
Okay. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, drink.
Boom. Salud. Woo. This is pretty good. Mike, how's the San Matias that you're drinking?
It's actually much better than the first drink I had. Sorry, the first sip that I had.
Yeah. I think like inebriated helps.
Yeah.
It does. Everything gets a little easier.
I'm looking this shit up because like all tequilas that I've had north of the like $40 mark are pretty fucking good.
Mm.
Like one of the three or four that I've had was the George Clooney one, the Casamigos.
And I have that one. Casamigos, that was good.
It's solid.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, this San Matias is the same price range as the Casamigos, so I might look into that. Okay, so when y'all are ready,
okay.
I guess like let each other know and click the LOL because this is some shit that's hilarious.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready too. 3, 2, 1.
Go.
Oh.
What?
So I forget where I saw this. I saw this somewhere. Yeah, please look at the photos. Okay, so for those of you, I'm gonna link this into the description. So for those of you who want to experience the surprise at the same time as Jaina and Michael, I just called you Michael. I hope you're okay with that.
It's fine.
So this, goddamn it, this is, the headline is, Russia's most modern robot revealed to just be a person in a suit. And they have like a whole like
like fucking like Samsung revealed TED Talk ass stage where this robot is on stage. And oh god, it's so funny.
This if is you scroll, very Russian.
This is so good. If you scroll down, there's a photo of like kids interacting with it, and you can very much see into the back of the neck, and there's like a dude like in it.
I don't have words.
Translate the Russian in this tweet just to see what the deal is. Yeah, this is hilarious.
I'm sorry. This is really funny. I can't stop. Insane. Okay.
This is from a while ago, but I had to share it with someone.
You know, I'm not surprised. I'm really not. This is one of those situations where it's like you're doing something stupid and you think that other people are stupid and won't notice the stupid thing you're doing. And we did notice.
Okay, so did y'all see the tweet towards the bottom of the article?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What is it
okay,
say?
So I translate it. It's the first day of the forum, quote unquote, projector opened 6 copyright lessons of the best teachers of Russia. So it's a perfectly serious tweet, even though you can see the man in the fucking suit.
Right. And it doesn't, like, forgive me for being a snob, but it doesn't look very technologically advanced. It looks like it's made out of a bath toy or something. Like, did anybody ever really think this was seriously a robot? Like, you can see a human neck.
I mean, this looks like a dude cosplaying as, like, Daft Punk's long-lost cousin or something. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's like Big Hero 6's weird cousin.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Big Loser 6.
I thought it'd be a good idea to while we're talking about CSS to be like, meanwhile, in Russia, this is happening. Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, my God.
Meanwhile, in Russia.
Yeah. In Soviet Russia, robot is just a human.
A robot is guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, this is hilarious. I love this.
So good. I haven't laughed at something Russia did in a long time. Thank you.
And I'm sure that like the Russian news media, you know, is like mad controlled by the government and shit over there.
Yeah.
Like I would not doubt if like in the mainstream media that it has not gotten out that that was just a dude in a suit.
Oh man. Okay. Wow.
That's so funny. It's so good. Okay. So
think about it. It's actually a little sad if they don't know that this is, I mean, they're just so, they don't have access to current information that they think this is real.
Oh, I know. I'm sure like there's some minority of people that do, that have access to whether it's like dissenting.
Yeah.
I know there's like 1 or 2 dissenting news outlets there that are like heavily, monitored, and like the guy who was the owner of one of them I'm just gonna like nerd out for a second. So I was watching this is before he committed suicide, but while I was watching Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, and there's one in Russia, and he has a dinner with this opposition to Putin, that is. And this guy owns like one of the opposition media companies in the country. And that same guy in, I think it was 2016, was like straight up murked by some people who were absolutely Putin's thugs in the Red Square. And Putin the next day blamed it on Chechnyans. So yeah, shit is crazy over there. It's wild. Absolutely insane. So I don't know what happened to that news outlet. I think it might still exist. But Russia's fucking insane. Anyway.
I just can't get over this. I mean, wow.
It's so funny. It's so great. I forget where I saw it. It might have been like Reddit, or maybe it was Flipboard or something. But I lost my shit when I saw it. And I was like, I have to talk about this on the podcast. This is amazing. So yeah, that's a thing. Okay, so smooth transition back into CES mode. Apparently, at CES, I didn't realize, I saw there was a lot of buzz around it, but I didn't realize it was because of CES. The Impossible Burger, many of you might be familiar with it, apparently announced their 2.0 version of the product. And I've had the regular version a lot just because I personally have stopped eating beef since like a year and a half ago-ish. And by eating, I mean like not purchasing it. I'll still eat it if people give it to me, but I'm not trying to like put my money into beef for like environmental reasons. But the Impossible Burger was already a pretty good beef emulation, but this one, I'll link y'all here from Futurism. I'll link it in the Hangouts again. But this version is really interesting because they are trying to emulate raw burgers, like a red burger that you cook and is red in the center, which is super interesting. And apparently it's so realistic that like vegetarians would eat it and get disgusted because they thought they were eating beef kind of thing. That's how realistic it was. You flame char. Yeah. I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
You flame char it and, you know, it's still pink on the inside kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, the Impossible Burger, the 1.0, I guess, is what they're calling the version. I'm not sure. But the one that I have, you know, going out and eating at like M Burger in River North, it's so realistic that like I thought, oh, I'm getting a vegetarian-based burger. It'll make me feel as good as a vegetarian meal would. And it's like, nope, it makes me feel like shit just like a beef burger would. So like that's how realistic the product is.
Wow.
I feel unhealthy eating it, for better or worse. So yeah, I thought this was super interesting that they had achieved this. Jay, I think you were on, was it both you and Ashley, the episode that I had gotten obsessed with like the future of food and we talked about that?
Was it just Ashley? I was on that episode.
Oh, it was you and Ashley. Yeah. Okay.
Although everything is kind of overshadowed by me finding out that you have magnets in your fingertips.
You
wait, what?
What?
Your fingertip magnets.
Oh, no, I have a singular... Okay, we're going to get into this now.
I'm sorry. I just... It's so cool. But also,
I have a
like,
singular magnet in one of my fingers. Mike's like, what the fuck? so, it's background.
I'm Magneto.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Pretty much.
I'm actually Magneto. It's like way less cool than that, unfortunately. I have a magnet in my finger because back in 2016, I had heard a podcast about biomodding where people put like NFC chips and magnets in their body.
Yeah.
And the NFC chip is for obvious reasons because, you know, you can open like a deadlock or a deadbolt, I mean, with like an NFC chip. But this... the magnet, the reason for the magnet is because when you put a magnet in somewhere like your finger that has a lot of nerves, you can feel electromagnetic waves. And it's this weird, like tactile, I don't want to call it a sixth sense because it's feeling, it's one of the five. But whenever I get on the L, for you Texan, the L is the train here. Whenever I get on the CTA here, I can feel the third rail. I feel microwaves. I can feel live wires whenever I'm like in my computer or doing things that live wires are around. Anything that there's like an electromagnetic field, I feel it. When cars are started, for some reason, I feel it. So I don't know what's going on there, but I feel that. So yeah, I have a magnet in my finger.
How close do you have to be to the car to feel the car starting?
Like, I mean, like passenger or driver. Not in the back, though. I don't feel it in the back. So, like, something's going on with, like, the motor and the key and the that I feel it. There's some sort of, I guess, it's like the battery has something to do with how, I don't understand how motors work, but maybe there's electricity going on there. I have no idea.
Yeah, when you first start it, there is.
Yeah, right? So, there you go. That's what I'm feeling. That's the thing. That being said, I'm trying to get it out because I'm kind of over it and it's annoying when I go to lift. And then, like, I have a lot of friends inviting me to, like, go rock climbing, and I can't because I have a fucking magnet in my finger that's going to, like, hurt because it's on the tip of my finger. And also, it healed such that, like, if I grab things really hard, it kind of pinches. So I definitely can't rock climb. So in the near future, I'd like to get it out just so I can go rock climbing again.
Have you been electrocuted since you've installed it?
No, no. And another thing people ask, so there, nothing electricity related has happened to it. And another thing people ask is like if it sets off like TSA. And no, it's not. Yeah, it's too small. It's a little, like a little tiny cylinder on the tip of my right ring finger. If you ever meet me in person, I'll let you touch it and be grossed out like everyone else is if I still have it. Yeah, it's too small and too weak to like fuck up credit cards or hard drives or anything like that. I do like sometimes feel metal detectors and stuff, but yeah, that's a thing. Wow. That's a thing that we're talking about on the podcast today as well. There you go.
Yeah.
If you want to feel electromagnetic waves, get a magnet put in your body by a body mod person.
And so where did you get this done at? I don't want to dwell on the subject, but locally here?
I don't mind. No, I didn't do it here. I did it in when I was visiting my mom. My mom lives in suburban New York, and I got it done by – so there's this website that's like kind of the unofficial website for these things called – what is it called? I'm sorry. I'm going to look up.
Hackmybody.org.
Biomagnet. They sell like not only the magnet but the – the god damn it, what is the name of the website? Dangerousthings.com. I knew it was a funny URL. So they have like a map where they suggest certain body mod people that are like associated with them, and these people are like pretty official, at least in the body mod community. Like they're very much about like being safe, putting stuff in your body like for the better. And they have like NFC implants and magnet implants and whatnot. So these folks have, you know, like a map that's like, you know, people we suggest, and there wasn't anyone in Chicago, but I was going back home to suburban New York to visit my mom. So I just got it done by some dude in Brooklyn who's like a body mod guy.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's like also a tattoo shop, but they do like body mod shit as well. And so I got that done there. But yeah, that's a thing that people do. People always are like, why the fuck would you do that? And it's like, I don't know. Because I'm weird and like doing weird shit. It's fun though.
Because I'm weird.
I'm a weird guy. What can I say? It's been fun. It's been already a few years. I'm also kind of over it. It's been fun. I had it since January of 2016. And like while I was enjoying it then. Oh, God.
No.
I'm so sorry.
What your damn finger magnet did.
That's right.
Your finger magnet.
This is your fault.
You're like yelling at your finger. Damn you.
This is you. Okay, I'm pouring. I don't know whose turn it is to count.
Yours.
It's my turn?
Yes.
So this is number 6?
Yes, I think.
Christ.
Yeah, because we're at 1:10.
Yeah. Oh, look at me being a guy that takes shots. All right. Are you all ready?
Yep.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Salud. Thank you for... Ooh. Damn, that's good. Oh. Thank you for putting up with my finger magnet bullshit. Yeah, it's a thing in my life. If you're like super curious about it, I would say like much like a tattoo, let it sink in your mind for a little bit before you decide to do it. After a few years, I'm kind of over it, and I'm going to get a friend or my fiance's mother to take it out with a scalpel and some, is it ketamine? I forget what lidocaine. That's what it is.
Yeah, I was hoping not ketamine.
Yeah. No, it's not ketamine. That's absolutely the wrong drug. 1000% the wrong drug. Yeah, when they put it in first, it was like tourniquet the finger, quick injection of lidocaine, and after like a few minutes, once the lidocaine takes, it's like slice it open in the tip, shove the magnet in, and just sew it shut.
Cool.
I don't even think they sewed it shut. I don't remember if they sewed it shut or did super glue, but super glue is also common for like small cuts.
Incisions, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Anyway, I don't know. If y'all have questions, feel free to ask, but I was going to try to move on.
No, that's fine.
I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we're grossed out enough by your finger.
Thanks for the story about your, you know, right hand ring finger.
Okay, so moving on to our suggested apps section. I have yet to come up with a soundboard sound for this. I will eventually. Mike, I'll have you start for the suggested apps.
Yeah. So, sorry. This week, playing with, it's called Darkroom. So it's a universal app for iOS. So it works on your iPad, your iPhone. So on the iPhone, this is probably my favorite, first favorite or maybe second favorite app I use for editing photos. So I am someone who's big into mobile photography. I use my cell phone a lot to take photos, both around of architecture and of just family. So this is from a universal app. It does support RAW images, so you could shoot in JPEG or RAW. It does have kind of a very robust tool set. So you got the basic tools like the crop, the color, the histogram, but then also it's got a lot of filters. You can edit the filters, create filters, custom filters. And it is integrated with the Moment series of lenses. So if you shoot, have either one of you heard of Moment lenses?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you shoot with Moment, it is integrated with that. So you can actually just edit your photos right into this app. Which is nice.
So what, I don't even know how to shoot RAW on iPhone. You can't do that with the default camera app, can you?
You cannot. No, you would have to have an app that has RAW support.
I didn't even know that existed. Here I am, an enthusiast photographer, and I did not know this was a thing. Is there second app from you? Do you suggest an app that can shoot RAW, perchance?
So you could either use Halide. Halide is probably my favorite camera app.
So Halide?
Yep, you're correct. And that's also integrated with Darkroom. If not Halide, the Moment app is very full-featured as well.
Okay. Does the Moment also shoot RAW?
It does, yeah. They both shoot RAW.
Dude, I had no idea you can shoot RAW on iPhone. What?
Yeah, you can shoot RAW. I think for the last two OSs, so since iOS 10. Yeah, so it's not a recent thing.
You're teaching me something new. I had no idea. I'm over here, so I'm like enthusiast photographer. Like, photography is what got me into design, and so it's been a constant in my life. And I have a mirrorless camera, I have a DSLR. Whenever I travel, I take the mirrorless with me for sure. And I tend to do desktop stuff. So now that I have the iPad Pro, the iPad Pro has been like awesome. I just got the 10.5 from a friend who works at Apple for cheap. And I'm super into the iPad Pro in general. I have yet to edit photos on it, just because like my workflow for photos has generally been Mac based. But I'm looking for suggestions on like iOS based stuff just to play with the iPad. So this is definitely on my list. I've installed Lightroom. How does this compare to Lightroom in your opinion?
So I guess the first thing is that Lightroom is, it's free, but you have to have a subscription to kind of get the full features of it. So if you don't have the subscription, it's not really, I think, that valuable an app. There are still some cool features in there. This you pay for once, and you obviously get to use it for however as long as they, until they have the next upgrade. But there are more – Lightroom is more robust in terms of the number of features, because it's Lightroom and it's Adobe's kind of their wheelhouse. I think Darkroom will eventually get there. But it's, I think they're both great apps. I think each have their own kind of uniqueness to them.
Gotcha. I haven't played with Lightroom on mobile at all, or on iOS or Android at all. So I have no idea what the functionality is on iOS compared to Darkroom. But this looks super cool. How do you feel about the filters? Like, do you think they're pretty good?
Yeah. So I like the filters. I think they're a good starting point for a lot of the photos. I use, which one do I use here? Let me, because you can mark favorites as well. Hold on one second.
Oops. The reviews are really good too, so that's solid. Yeah. And it's an editor's choice app as well.
Yeah. So for some reason, my favorites are not syncing over for the, I think it's on my side though, but you could mark, I think you mark filters as favorites. Okay. It's a robust app.
What's the price point? You said it was paid.
$4.99, if I'm not mistaken. And it's universal. Okay,
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great for like a solid photo editing app, for sure. Have you played with, I haven't used it at all or looked at it, but have you played with Affinity Photo?
I have, but it was probably about 12 months ago or about a year ago, and I haven't I haven't played with it since.
Okay. I was just curious. I'm only now familiarizing myself with the options on iOS. Definitely in the market for like a good app on iOS that can edit photos, just so like when I'm on vacation and I want to like go through the photos I just took, kind of edit them real quick. Yeah. Okay, this is definitely on my list. This is cool.
I was mistaken. It's actually free with in-app purchases, and there's like there's several in-app purchases depending on which tool set you want to get.
Oh, cool. Interesting. This is super cool. Yeah, I'm super into this. This is on my list of like photo editing apps for sure. So I'm in the market. Dope. Okay, Jaina, I'm going to let you go before me on the suggested apps.
Okay.
Go.
This is interesting because it's like literally the other side of photography context. So do you remember like disposable cameras?
Of course.
Okay.
They're still a thing for some reason.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, for some reason.
So there's this app that I found or someone told me about, and now I'm sort of obsessed with it because I'm nostalgic like that. And it's called Fuji, like Fujifilm, the disposable camera.
Gotcha, yeah.
And it takes photos the way that...
For the listeners, that's H-U-J-I.
Yes. And it takes photos the way that disposable cameras used to take them. And by that, I mean you can set a date in this app, and it'll take a photo as if it's that year with the same, like, disposable camera technology, and then put a date stamp in the corner of the photo like it's, you know, being developed at a pharmacy or wherever you got it developed. I didn't notice how like weirdly different they looked until I like took a photo. I took a selfie on my regular phone camera, and then I took one in Fuji, and they look so different. The way that things used to just kind of be this weird sort of reddish color in general on those photos, and the way things look like they're moving even though they're not, just it's mm-hmm. it's really like a fun nostalgic thing, and I've just been playing with it. It's really cool, and it just kind of reminds me of like, you know, that time.
This is super fun.
I like it.
Yeah, in Lightroom on desktop, I have a bunch of like film emulating filters saved. And this is super reminiscent of that shit. Although it's more reminiscent, I don't know if y'all will know what I'm talking about, but like photography nerds will know. There was like back in the 2000s, there was this like huge obsession with Holga cameras, which are like these like Russian made, like super shitty cameras that like would let like light leak and stuff. And it was like a certain aesthetic that people were going for. And I feel like this is similar, less shitty, but like a similar aesthetic of like older tech aesthetic with like your current tech, with like the shit that's in your pocket now.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. So I'm just like Googling around the photos. Go for it, Mike.
Have you guys, I'm not sure how long everyone's been on Instagram, but like when Instagram first launched, this is what people used to upload.
Oh, dude, hell yeah. Yeah. Because I was using Instagram like I used to use Flickr to just like upload my photography. I still do, even though people use it as a social media platform. And like, I remember in the beginning, it was like mad Holga like type filters and shit. And people would, I mean, to this day, I still see filters on Instagram that are very much like this with like extreme lens flare and like, super crazy.
And I just love how there's like a tiny little viewfinder in the app, and like you're actually going to put your eye up to your phone. But
oh, what? Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of nostalgically adorable, I guess. And I find that I like the way that some photos come out when they're like that, rather than, you know, like true kind of, I don't know what the term for not white balanced is. But like the way that they come out when I just take them on my phone. So
yeah,
it's kind of cool.
This looks fun. Interesting. Now if this shot raw, I would be like super into it. Oh my God. It's like on my second monitor and I wasn't paying attention because I was looking at these photos. They're super cool. Okay, shit. I guess we have to take a shot. Yay!
Yay! What shot is this? Seven?
I guess so. How about we call this the last shot and we'll finish up with me?
You call it whatever you want.
Shit. Okay. I have no idea whose turn it is to count. Is it Mike? Because I just went.
Mike's.
Yeah.
Mike's.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Boom. Ooh, I've been. Woo, Jay. I noticed you were sipping on like champagne or some shit on the side.
Yeah. Also, it's sort of like a chaser.
Woof. I've been drinking water.
It's. Oh God, I forgot what the name of it is, but it's pretty nice.
The champagne?
Yeah. I've been drinking Mum for a while because I just got into
Mum?
Yeah, it's like a Napa bubble.
Like Mum's the word, like M-U-M?
M-U-M-M.
Oh.
Yeah, so I got into that and they have like this rosé bubble that's kind of good. So it's another one of their brands. It's not bad.
Fair enough. I mean, like, I'm super into champagne and wines and bubbly in general.
Yeah, I love wine.
Or like Prosecco, man. Prosecco is like the cheap champagne.
Prosecco's amazing.
That shit is good. I guess we'll talk about my app since we're done talking about... Are you good on Hooji?
Yes.
Okay, so... regular listeners will know that I meant in December to post video episodes that I didn't post. It was because of technical problems. But now that I'm over those technical problems, I am editing those videos on my iPad, which is awesome, with this program, or I should say app, this app called LumaFusion. And those of you who have iPad Pros or just iPads in general might be aware of this app. It's super fucking cool. It's available for both. It's not just iPad. It's iOS in general. But I would recommend not using it on iPhone just because there's a lot going on in the interface and using it on an iPhone might be crowded. But for video editing, I find it to be like super, super powerful for an iPad. Like going from what I expected for an iPad, like this is super, super great. So... it's for basic editing. Like you can make cuts, you can make, you know, like speed changes and whatnot. You can make, let's see, it's like speed changes, the level of like the decibels on the audio. And then there's like certain like dynamic processing on the audio. And then there's certain processing on the video. You know, you get like certain animations and certain filters that you can use. And, you know, it's not as powerful as Premiere or Final Cut Pro might be, but for something on the iPad where, like, I want to sit down and just cut a bunch of video and try to, like, you know, get through this hour and a half that we were building Nintendo Labo that I'm trying to post. It's a good way to get through the video and it's a good way to edit it. And I'm genuinely surprised at how well it like scrubs through the video, which, you know, even on like a decent computer might be somewhat laggy, but on an iPad it scrubs just fine. For those of you that don't know what scrubbing means, scrubbing is like when you scroll through the video and you see it like render. It renders fine and I'm genuinely like super surprised. I don't know what else to say about it. It's super great. Overall, Mike, I just saw you link something.
Yeah. So there's one of the YouTubers, his name's Jonathan Morrison, and he goes through work. I don't know if you've seen the video before, but he goes through his workflow of editing an entire video on an iPad Pro using LumaFusion.
Oh yeah. I think I started watching this video and then I did not finish it.
Yeah. So
I feel like I should just to familiarize myself.
I own the app, but I'll be honest with you. I didn't have that much time to play with it. What kind of didn't make immediate sense or wasn't really clear to me is the process of getting content or, you know, clips onto your iPad. I imported all my clips from an iCloud drive. I don't know how you did it, but that's that just seemed like it took too long.
Yeah, I did it from another cloud drive. I did it from just because I have... I have OneDrive just because I needed Microsoft Office for like cover letters and stuff, but you know, terabyte for free. And so I, on OneDrive is where I store all my cloud stuff, and I was downloading it from the cloud. And yeah, it took a minute to download, which is somewhat annoying. Yeah, I wish it would be able to access that faster, but it's downloading it locally, and I guess that's why it scrubs so fast. It's because it, you know, once it downloads it locally, it can render quickly. I'm still genuinely impressed by that, but yeah, the download speeds were not good.
Yeah, like there's some hardware solutions that you can purchase to get your content off the SD card or off the media card, and then it'll stream them from that hardware solution to your iPad. But that's like an extra couple $100. If I want to try the app, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah, and like my solution is all cloud based for the most part, so I don't mind like trying to download it real quick and like going to do other stuff and then coming back.
Okay.
But yeah, if you're trying to download it right then and there, it's a pain in the ass.
Totally.
Yeah, that is a pain in the ass. I will admit that much. But generally, I'm like super impressed by the app. Like in terms of what is capable on an iPad Pro, I was not aware of this before because this is my first iPad Pro. Like what is capable, like video editing wise with LumaFusion is wild. It's super cool. What were you gonna say?
Have you tried Adobe Rush or Adobe Premiere Clips?
So I've seen Rush, and Rush, I'm not sure what Rush is. I saw it in the Creative Cloud, and then Premiere Clips. I haven't heard of that. What's that?
I think Adobe launched an iPad version. It's called Adobe Premiere Clips. Adobe Premiere. I might be misquoting the name of the app. It's Clips. Yeah, Adobe Premiere Clip. Sorry, not Clips. Plural.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you. So I've never used it. I don't have an Adobe subscription. I use Final Cut.
Gotcha.
I was wondering if you had seen it, but it sounds like you're not familiar with it.
No.
It looks like it's just some kind of scaled down version of editing on Creative Cloud on your iPad.
Interesting. Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
This one looks interesting too. I have to check this out for sure. Huh. Okay. Yeah, totally. Okay, I'll definitely check this one out. But generally, I'm impressed with how LumaFusion just handles, handles the files, how it renders. It's been really solid. I'm just impressed with like both the iPad Pro and LumaFusion, to be honest. Just in general, it's able to tackle more than I thought it was. Like, never would I thought I could render video that well on an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
That's just some shit that like never occurred to me. I thought I needed like a beefy graphics card to be able to render that shit well. It's so weird to think about an iPad that way.
Yeah,
but I guess I got to start thinking about it that way.
Gina, do you have a tablet?
Jay, you there?
Jay?
Rap? She left.
Yeah.
Jay!
Yep.
Sorry. Shake-a-la.
Spunk was like pawing at the door, so I got up to let him in, and then he wanted to get back out, and I was like, come on, boy. Okay.
Do you do anything on a tablet at all, or?
You remember that book I wrote?
Yes. The one that's in my Kindle library that I haven't read yet.
Oh yeah, thanks for buying. mostly just publishing stuff. Haven't really gotten into photography, but I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab, an iPad, and an Amazon Kindle that I use to just like test out before I, you know, publish. And then, you know, just formatting stuff on iPads for, you know, readers, but not really photography. And I kind of have to trust when I get images from designers because I have no idea like how it's going to work. So this has been educational.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know you're very like publishing, writing oriented in general. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, I think it's a good place to end the podcast. So thank y'all for coming.
Thank you.
So, Mike, remind everyone where it is that they can find you.
Yep. So it is youtube.com/tech247tv. And or just tech247.tv on the web.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mike has done, is it a group of y'all or is it just you? Because you have been in all the videos and you do a good job of reviewing and reviewing, I guess is the word. all the videos I've seen and all the products I've seen on your channel.
Yep, so it's just one man show. There's sometimes gotcha. Laura's in the background telling me to do things. But otherwise it's just me, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Totally. Cool. And then Jay, where are you here from?
I am here from the Pretty Witty Podcast. You can find us at theprettywitty.com and also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything but MySpace because nobody uses that anymore at prettywitty.com.
Justin Timberlake apparently still uses it. It's like a music streaming service.
Sad. Okay.
You're like, oh, maybe I'll go back on.
Yeah, I mean, he's there.
Yeah, you know where you can find us is at TechKilaCast. You can find me yelling at conservatives on Twitter at Daniel's a nerd. Yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening. Peace. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. We can stop recording. Never remembering. Ever degenerate. Instead of forgetting and letting them live in the setting like sediment. I'm that part. Mix it up with six guy. Rage against machine. Bitter J-Rock. K-Dot. Switch it up. Gangsta. Getting on my stage props. Dealer with the beats and catch me singing like a... As always, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Tech Kila. Mama call me Yeshua. Running out of time with the Harry Potter head scar. I ain't got a desk job. For the regular listeners, I'd like to thank you for your support and ask that you please help us to continue to improve the show by heading over to our Patreon page and donating $1 a month. Head farts, yeah, that's for all your gum smack, mud flap, scuzz bag, unwrapped sex. By donating just $1 a month, you'll really be helping us out, and you'll get Tech Kila closer to hitting our goal of $30 per month. Yeah, this is how I rap before I hit it up. Top shit, but I still respect women. Once that goal is reached, I personally will be designing and sending each of you a tequila branded shot glass or two to show my appreciation. So head over to patreon.com/techkila to support the show. That's Patreon, which is spelled patreon.com/techkila. Like egregious kids suggest in front and like Jesus and elitist pimps come from Mars and bitches come from Venus. The way I see us is my strength is all your weakness. Treat them like a hedonist. Every obstacle defeated. Preach it, I'm a seed of weed. Remember, you can submit topics for the show and interact with me and guests on the subreddit, which is found at reddit.com/r/techkila. That's for all your Joe rap smoke ploys. That's for all your go brag, no half, low grab. Oh, snap. You can follow Tech Kila on Twitter for the latest hot takes on tech news at Tech Kila Cast. Watch list, that did it. This is how I rap before I hit it. Talk shit, but I still respect women. The Tech Kila theme song is Ride Out by Yeshua, which is spelled Y-S-H-W-A. You can also find him online as Vincent Augustus. Thanks, y'all. Ride out. They ain't praising my saint, my miracle. They ain't in my blood. Ride out. They ain't praising my saint, my miracle.